guy.
That's the masses. Welcome back to Give Me Some Truth. Today, Evan and I are going to sit and have a nice discussion about his career journey so far. A young career. Is this the first time you've been on a podcast?
This is the very first time I've been in front of any sort of camera, yes.
Well, camera and podcast. So it's a video podcast for those that are just listening as well. You can tune in and see Evan. But I wanted to get into, so that people that get into the industry have a little bit more of a flavor for how you get into the industry and kind of your path and how you found your way here to, you know, financial planning and what you're looking forward to in the future. And we can also talk about his path at Wagner Conin. So you've been with us for, what, a couple months now?
Yeah, about a month and a half now, yeah.
Seemed like 6 months already.
It does. It seems like I've been here for forever.
I mean, you've been drinking from a fire hose from the start. I mean, we threw him in right away into learning systems and everything. There wasn't any sort of, and we don't have a super formal training program. It's kind of like sit down and get to know Polly, who kind of runs the show back there in our back office, and she's training Evan to kind of train herself out of a position, which is exactly how it should work. Mm-hmm. And so, Evan, tell us kind of how you got here out of college. Where'd you graduate? And then from there, what brought you to Wagner Conin then?
Yes. So I graduated from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in December of 2020, so right in the middle of COVID.
Best time to do that, huh?
Best time. It was a great graduation ceremony in my parents' living room in my pajamas on a Sunday morning.
Can't even imagine.
It was great. And so that happened in December of 2020. I took my first job up in the Twin Cities shortly thereafter. Worked at a IT contracting company, boutique contracting company up in the Twin Cities for a year. And I was contracted at Wells Fargo in their data analytics department, supporting their wealth management group. After that contract period was up in February of 2022, I converted to a full-time role at Wells Fargo, and spent from March of 2022 until just recently, November of 2023, in that same role at Wells Fargo, in data analytics, supporting wealth management, investment solutions, customer support, customer remediation projects, things like that. So just a lot of work where my primary partners were our business partners, and that was great. I really enjoyed my time at Wells Fargo. Great team, great group of people. But once I moved to Madison in April, that kind of opened the door for maybe a little bit of a career change. And I always kind of knew that data analytics, well, it was great career path. It just wasn't really for me for the long term. So I kind of kept my eyes and ears open, kind of thought about what I might want to do going forward. And when the time came for me to leave my current position at Wells Fargo in November, I was really in the midst of doing a lot of research, a lot of networking, trying to figure out what career path was right for me. And I finally landed on, financial planning and wealth management, and, really just kind of dove in head first. I left my job, so I had a lot of free time, and I started doing a lot of research and a lot of networking in the Madison area with people just like, you, Clint. Mitch on the team was actually the first person from Wagner Conin that I talked to in early December, just to, pick these people's minds to try to see like how they broke into the industry, like what they might think and what their recommendations might be for somebody like me who's, 24 years old, has been working for 3 years in a somewhat related field, but not really related to, financial planning. Just got a lot of great conversations in with people in Madison. Studied up for my Series 65 exam, which I took in January and passed shortly before starting here. Which was a big relief and big weight off my shoulders for sure. That's kind of how I got to where I was. I ended up starting here in late January. So it's been a great month and a half.
So what made you choose to take the Series 65 exam?
Yeah, so that was, for somebody with no real experience in the industry, it took a little bit to confirm which exams I should be taking, which ones would be best for me to take first. I ended up landing on the Series 65 because that would allow me, I think they call it an IAR, Investment Advisor Representative. Mm-hmm. That's what you are if you pass the 65, which allows you to provide investment advice for a fee, which is a little bit different than like a Series 6 or a Series 7, for example, where you know, you're going to take those if you want to go work for a broker dealer, you know, and sell products for that broker dealer, as well as maybe provide investment advice. If you know, that's where you get the 66 in there as well. But I knew from the start that I did not want to work for a broker dealer. I wanted to work for a fee only, fiduciary, independent investment advisor, which, and then ideally also that would be a small company as well. It was just a local company. So there were a lot of boxes I wanted to check with where I wanted to work. But I knew that I wanted to be fee only for sure. And that's kind of where the 65 came into play.
Yeah, you kind of narrowed down the amount of firms that you go into when you're so specific in that. But, you know, I agree with, you know, I think that those are the types of firms you would want to focus on if you're looking, for sure, if you wanted to be more of a wealth manager, right, and mm-hmm. you're working on something where commissions are not important to you or you right. don't feel comfortable with accepting those commissions. There's nothing really wrong with that. I grew up in that part of the business, but I do believe that if I had the opportunity to start fresh, that's probably where I'd want to focus. Mm-hmm. I was impressed by, and when we met Evan, I was certainly impressed by the fact you had already taken and passed the 65. It does show seriousness in being in the industry, and you know, now you know that you have the chops to pass an exam, and there's more exams to come in your future. Yes, I'm sure. But you know, I think that it really does set you apart as a candidate, and so for anyone that's listening to this or watching us, I think that is one of the things that being a business owner, that, you know, if a candidate comes to us and has that 65 already passed, it does put them on a little bit higher level. And now I also know that as an employer, they might not be distracted by having to pass that over time and go through that difficulty. Now, the exams you're looking at are going to be harder in the future, but, you know, I do think that did, you know, that was impressive. That did set you apart as a candidate. And I would also say in that, you know, that when you're going through the search, you did the networking, you reached out to somebody in the firm to have that open conversation. And it was kind of that warm lead into mm-hmm. the organization versus something where you're just cold emailing a principal and saying, hey, give me a job. So that was an interesting strategy. I wanted to kind of unpack that a little bit as far as like, was that an active strategy or was it more of a, I just want to learn some more from a younger guy with the firm, which is Mitch.
Yeah. So as I was kind of feel out the industry in Madison and see like who, you know, I did a lot of, like I said, a lot of research on the front end, trying to decide, you know, looking at all the different, you know, wealth management companies I could find in Madison and kind of narrowing down obviously first to fee only. So that gets rid of a lot of the candidates. And then just kind of going through and looking at, you know, the websites, the social media of all these different companies and kind of seeing what the team is made up of, how big the team is, just things like that. And, you know, my strategy, to go back to your question, was I didn't want to go into these initial conversations and say, hey, like, do you have a job available for me? Because 99% of the time that's not going to happen. And it's going to make you sound a little bit, you know, it's going to make you sound very forward in that conversation. And I didn't want to do that. So my plan was just to get these conversations on the calendar, talk to people, like I said, about breaking into the industry, advice they might have for me. And then just kind of throw in at the end, like, you know, obviously I'm taking the 65 sometime in January, you know, I'll be looking for a job soon after that. You know, I'd love it if you keep me in consideration or let me know if you know of any other firms or colleagues in the industry that might be looking for somebody like me. And that worked out really well in my favor. And I didn't know how long it was going to take to find a job. You know, I'm very lucky and it was a very good timing that this job worked out the way it did. But in the back of my head, I had planned, you know, maybe going a few months without a job and trying to find like a backup, just part-time job somewhere else to kind of cover my costs until I was able to find that, you know, perfect position that I wanted. Cause I didn't want to take a job that was like fine. And okay, like I wanted to make sure that I was taking a job that I really was excited about and with a company that I really wanted to work for. So,
and I think it's not uncommon for being out of college for 3-4 years trying to figure out what you ultimately want to do, and then you mm-hmm. really want to get that next job right. Yeah. That's a great way to handle it. I think that as one of the owners of a firm, we're always kind of passively looking. You know, it's every once in a while we actively look, but we're kind of always have our toes in the water. And I think your strategy that you employed was a good one because, hey, I just want to find out a little bit more. I want to find out more about, and then you get to interact with us and find out a bit more about our culture, mm-hmm. which is one of the things that I think that sets us apart from other firms is kind of how we do things there. And you know, our tagline is comfortably unique. And I think we live that. What's one thing that's been, what's one thing that you found that you didn't expect when you started that, that now you're facing?
Well, this might be a little bit, you know, smaller scheme than you're looking for, but
all right.
I was surprised, like when you went through the interview and everything, you said like, oh, you know, like you're going to get really good at calling Schwab support or something like that. Or like, you know, I'm going to be obviously the expert at all the administrative tasks by the time I'm, you know, all trained up on this job and everything. I didn't realize that being good with Schwab support meant calling them multiple times a day. I was like, okay, maybe you call them a couple of times a week for outstanding issues that you have or something. But like, no, like you're calling them at least once a day, if most likely two or three or four times a day, just on different outstanding issues and just making sure everything's online and making sure everything's getting pushed along like you want it to, because a lot of the times it does take my intervention or Polly's intervention to make sure that different work efforts are being pushed along the way they should be. So that was a little bit of a surprise.
I totally get that. And you know what? I think that that part of the job is underrated because you think in our industry that we're so technologically proficient and things go through. And that's totally not the case. A lot of stuff's really old school when it comes to that. I wish it was better, but it's simply not. And it does take, you know, one person on each of our teams to do that full time to be able to push stuff through. And you're right. And, you know, going into your career path a little bit, you know, we brought you in as more of a client service specialist with the thought that you'd be learning that base knowledge and then going up to an advisor role, which is a path that we have done in the past and are currently doing with Polly right now. And so that's an interesting way to do it. There's other ways where you could get into just trying to be a paraplanner or something immediately. But I think that if you learn all the fundamentals of this business, the easiest way to be successful is to learn it from the ground up. And then you'll understand all the nuance to even the paperwork and the service teams and all of that. And then, you know, we ascend up with that base knowledge. It's just like learning a sport. I think you have to learn how to block and tackle before you go and, you know, run the really complex plays, because you know the fundamentals now. You know the blocking schemes. You know how to run the play, versus getting tossed into more of an advisor role. And, you know, we really also believe in, you know, generating and curating leads through our own marketing activities. And we hope that that's it. There's always a part of, you know, I know this person, but at a young age, it's extremely difficult to break into this industry and say, well, now you got to work with me. And then 10 years later, you find out that that's not maybe the target clientele that you want to focus on. And you've built this other clientele and now you have this extra specialty. So that's something that I think is really interesting. What do you miss the most out of Milwaukee?
Oh, from school?
From school, from a place to eat, from a place, you know, what do you miss about Milwaukee?
I do miss the professional sports teams out there. I love going to Badger games. I've had the opportunity to go to, you know, more than a handful of from different sports while I've been here. And obviously I grew up between here and Milwaukee. So I've been, you know, I've been a Badger fan all my life and been to plenty growing up, but I do miss the option to just, you know, go to a Brewer game one night or go to a Bucks game one night and not really have to make like a whole weekend out of it or something like that. You know, there's just something different about pro sports.
I agree. So
that's definitely something I do miss from being closer.
Yeah, I miss that too. I mean, I was a big Brewer fan growing up and I just love being able to just shoot down there and go to a game. And now it's always a big deal to go. You know, you do have to turn it into something. Fortunately, my parents live there, so it's an easier deal, but yeah, I totally agree with you. The Bucks have become quite good now too, so it's a harder ticket than going to the old Bradley Center and going to that library that was also known as a basketball arena. So, but now it's super fun in the Fiserv.
It's a great place.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, as far as your career path goes and kind of how you see your next steps, what are some of the, you know, kind of intermediate goals that you have for yourself?
Yeah. So my goals going forward, I would love to begin studying for CFP certification sometime this year. Don't really have a solid plan laid out for that yet, but I do know that I'm going to have to be, you know, completing some education requirement to that. That's probably going to take, once I start it, 10 to 12 months around that period of time before I actually sit and study for the exam itself. So that'll be kind of the next big thing on, you know, the education side for me. And then in terms of goals from the actual job itself, obviously getting trained up and kind of allowing Polly to transition to a full-time advisor role as much as she can, while handing off most of the, you know, client service admin work to me, you know, as we get, you know, farther and farther into this year and into the summer and into the fall beyond that. Definitely a big goal for me.
Yeah, and obviously our goal is to train you out of a job at some point, you know, so that you follow the same path that Polly follows. And I think that studying for and getting your CFP when you're young is very important. I do think it's part of that sort of checkbox or stamp of approval as far as, you know, the financial services industry. I don't have my CFP. I'm one of the least credentialed people here in the firm. And, you know, but that's, you know, part of that is that I've substituted some experience for that. I think that the CFP, though, for younger people is essential. I think it's really important. I think it's important from a base knowledge perspective. I do wish the CFP would moderate a bit or progress a bit as far as, you know, their educational requirements. I think that, you know, I think they should not have to require a bachelor's degree, even though you have one. You know, I do think that they should not have to require that. And I think that their educational requirements are a little backwards that way. I wish that they would fix some of that. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a long process to get the CFP, and then you need an experience requirement of a couple of years as well.
That's right.
Which is one thing that Alicia, she passed the exam, and now she's in the middle of her experience requirement, and then she can officially call herself a CFP, which is very interesting about how that all works. I wish that would be amended too, but I'm not part of the CFP board. So yeah, what are there any other things that you found really surprising that when you started kind of in financial services and in the industry that just struck you as being odd or surprising to you?
Honestly, nothing really that surprises me. I know that's not great podcast content, but I will say that, you know, I've talked to obviously all the networking I did prior to this job, and I've got a good friend who's been in the field at and another fee only RIA, but they're a much bigger one. They've got more of a national presence. He's been doing this for a few years. And so kind of hearing his, you know, before I started this role and kind of hearing what his job was like and like what his day to day was, versus what mine is now, that's a little bit different. I believe they've got a whole operations team and everything like that who, you know, handle all the buys and the sells and all the, you know, actually handling clients' assets, whereas we obviously being 10, 12 people don't have that. So that's actually me going in or you, Clint, or anybody else on the team going in and making those buys and the sells and moving funds around from one account to another, making distributions upon, you know, client request. That's something that is obviously just second nature to me now that I've been doing it for a month and a half, but it's just not something that I really thought about prior to starting because I kind of had some other preconceived notions in my head from outside influence.
Yeah, it's a big change. I mean, we let people get their hands dirty mm-hmm. early, you know, because we're a small team. You're absolutely right. A lot of times the training's centralized, the paperwork's centralized, you have a more specialized role. Our view is that, you know, we have to cross-train people in as many areas as we can. One of the things that Evans is going to do in the future is cross-train with our expat and international team. So we started him on the domestic team, learning that sort of all the attributes of that sort of paperwork and processes and workflows and all of that. And then the expat team is another animal because they have a lot of complexities around that. And yeah, that's exciting to, I mean, you drink from a fire hose the first 2 years that you're in here. And I think people don't understand how much of a learning curve it is. It's a different vernacular. It's a different way of doing business. And it's just, it just takes time. You know, there's no substitute for experience there. And then beyond that, meeting with clients, identifying their needs, you know, then you turn into more of the financial planner after that and learning all of that software. I mean, how many software programs do we have? I mean, I think
that's another surprising thing that I didn't think about. It's just the sheer number of different websites and logins that I've had to use, like just for all the different ways that, you know, we serve clients. There's just a lot of different softwares required for that.
Yeah, there's probably 10 different software packages that you've been exposed to already, and then being good at any of them takes a lot of time as well. So, well, thanks for taking the time today, Evan, to go through your journey. I think people can get a lot out of that journey as well. And feel free to contact us if you have any questions, or you know, if you have a question for Evan or for myself, being somebody that hires you know, young, newer advisors or advisor candidates in the future, please let us know, and we'll come back to you with another episode of Give Me Some Truth.
Walker Condon Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Walker Condon Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. The information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.
You gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky. Ask the masses for silence.